WWE, the custody of a child will be determined in a match. Oh, I knew he was going to do that.
Hulk Hogan is a jabroni, Hollywood blonde, but my boss, Mr. McMahon, is not jabroni. Get a horse of time, fool.
Put that cigarette out.
Will you stop?
What is up, Drunk Marks? Welcome to another episode of Drunk Wrestling History. My name is Adam. I'm your designated host. We are here for another fantastic wrestling adventure to take you through with, of course, some liquid influence, sustenance, consumed by these two guys.
This is Eddie, and it is a liquid influence. Woozle wuzzle.
And this is Scott. Drinking is my business, and business is good.
And let's talk about the beer of choice that is keeping the business good. What do we have tonight?
So I kind of fucked up, right? So I'm drinking Corona, but when I went into Safeway, I just reached over, grabbed a six-pack, threw it in the cart, and split. I was buying a bunch of stuff, and I did not even realize what I had actually bought until it came across the screen when I was paying for it. So it's a Corona Rita. So I was like, oh my God, dude, is that like some Corona margarita shit? No, it's a little pussy ass 7 ounce Corona bottle. So
a Coronita, if you will.
Coronita.
A little.
So whatever. Corona. It's regular Corona, but it's a tiny ass bottle. So we'll see if I can get through this whole episode with it. Probably not.
And without catching the coronavirus.
Oh, jeez. Well, yeah.
God willing.
Yeah, God willing. What are you drinking?
Peach Crown.
Where? You don't even have, where is
well,
that?
I had it before we started this episode. I don't have any in the glass right now because it's already finished.
Fucking loser.
As it right. has been established in previous episodes, the universal sign is, right?
When you need something. Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
You gets to snapping.
Yeah, but it's a useless sign if no one's here to respond to it.
Right. Right. Like the sounds of trees falling in the forest.
You know what? I'm sure a little bit of a break wouldn't hurt you.
Also, probably not.
Also, right. I think, didn't Apple just come out with the new snapping emoji? So if you text that, then...
I'll probably get ignored.
You know what? I mean, this is a live conversation. Try texting that. See what happens in the middle of it.
I'm actually texting Carissa and asking her to bring you Crown right now.
Oh, if she comes in with a bottle of Crown, that'd be perfect. Let's see.
While that is in progress, I'm still having some Iron Brew... some Scottish soda that I ordered from the internet because the internet is amazing at times. This is one of them when it came through. Again, it's an orange soda that has a bubblegum like aftertaste, but it is really good.
It's true. The internet is amazing, like especially if you want to hear Tessa Blanchard dutying.
Pretty much.
Just saying.
Well, you're the guy that paid for that, right?
No. I wish, because I assume it's actually a video.
What if it's just audio? What do you do with that? Like, just somebody grunting on the other end? You hear the occasional splash? Like, what do you do with that? Are you grabbing a sock and or your fleshlight and going to town? Like, what do you do with that?
I should shit in a bag and send it to you so you can put your dick in it.
We'll see right there. Now I'm getting movement downstairs. Thank you.
Tully must be so proud.
He must be so proud. Yeah. Slingshot suplexes. Nothing on that.
All right. Anyway, let's get started. This bullshit show.
In some ways than none. All right. So for this episode, we're going to have to go back to the year of our Lord, 1992. We're talking about the Royal Rumble. A big bill for that night. And, of course, the main event, which, of course, we'll be getting to in detail, the Royal Rumble match that was contested for a vacant... undisputed WWF World Heavyweight Championship. But, I mean, a very, very entertaining show, to say the least.
Every year when the Royal Rumble happens, somebody, numerous people, jump up and say the Royal Rumble 92 is the best of all time. I don't know that I would argue with that. I mean, Ric Flair winning at the end, spoiler alert, was great. And it was a great Rumble match in and of itself. But the undercard... not fantastic. Aside from Piper winning his first singles championship in WWF, I don't know that the undercard stands up to make it the best of all time. Strong, yes. I don't know about the best, though.
I think there's a lot to it is just people's memories of who was around then, right? It's kind of like it's kind of like us with Four.
Right.
Where, like, everybody you remember was on the show. So, like, all the classic... Because it's only 92, so a lot of the 80s guys are still around. And
yeah, they're
all
still hanging out.
Match.
Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely there are warm feelings for this show. I agree. Like, I don't think it's my favorite Rumble, but... you know what, though? But if you were to say what's a good Rumble, my head would go straight to 92.
92, yeah.
I'd have to put some thought into which one I like better. Like, I'm sure I'd come up with one, but I'd have to think about it. Like,
well, for me, it's 91. 91 okay. Because of the opener with the Rockers versus the Orient Express. That was such a strong lead-off to the show. Yeah. The Rumble itself was great, but 92 was awesome because of Flair. But if you really look at the undercard, a little weak.
Right.
A little weak.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's just go down the show then.
Is it worth it going into to pre-show?
No.
I mean, I didn't even...
We didn't see that as no. It wasn't even available. Show. No. No, not like today where you can tune in and get
well,
the pre-show.
Well, no. Actually, you know what? I'd like to know who was on the pre-show, just out of curiosity.
Chris Walker versus the Brooklyn Brawler.
Chris Walker?
Oh, I mean, that had to be a Pier 6 brawl, right? The fuck is Chris Walker? That's like...
It's regular Steamboat again, Savage from 3.
Just internet resources.
Okay, right.
Who's Chris Walker?
No idea. He's the chips crisps guy.
Crisps?
Yeah, that's what they eat in England. Walker's crisps. They're like Lay's. It's the same thing. They have like prawn cocktail flavor and things of this nature.
Wasn't Chris Walker, Texas Ranger? That's not him?
No. His name's like Chris Walker, is it?
Braden Walker? No?
No, it's like... I don't know. No, it's you know what? It's Walker, Texas Ranger. I don't actually know his first name.
It could be Luke Skywalker, and it still wouldn't matter. It's on a pre-show, which we didn't see as kids. So fuck that match.
Right.
All right. In that case, first match was the New Foundation versus the Orient Express.
So when the match first started, I was like, cool. First one's in the ring with the Orient Express. Thank you. Oh, okay.
No, I mean,
Carissa just brought us food.
Oh.
They're meatballs of some sort.
Korean meatballs.
Korean turkey
meatballs.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Made with real Korean men's balls. I'm excited.
Yes, I just squozed them.
I squozed them myself.
I squozed them myself.
So, speaking...
Thank you, Carissa.
Yeah.
That's why.
Speaking of Korean food, Orient Express were in the first match.
Okay. Yeah. What?
And I was like...
What a segue.
And I was kind of like... They were the first ones to the ring, and I was like, oh, I thought they wrestled... You alluded to this earlier... I was like, oh, cool. I thought they wrestled the Rockers at 91, but I guess it must have been 92 because they came to the ring first. And then New Foundation's music hits. I was like, oh, fuck.
This is not going to be anywhere near as good as what the Rockers gave us against. Not only that, but the Orient Express was a different iteration of the Orient Express. This time around was Tanaka and who was Paul Diamond. Who was actually Bad Company with Tanaka in the AWA. They were World Tag Team Champions.
Now, see, I did not know that. I was like, for me, I was like, why is one dude wearing a mask and the other dude's not wearing a mask? I was like, he must be someone recognizable, but I didn't know who, you know? And I was like, what's going on here? It seemed weird. And then I looked it up and like the Orient Express dude was like a white dude.
Yep.
From like Mississippi or some shit. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah, that was actually Bad Company.
Yeah, I never knew that. Yeah, like I found it out from that. That was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Nowhere near as good as what the Rockers gave us.
Oh, God, no. No, Owen and... first of all, they were dressed like fucking... they're in like AMC Hammer pants, but like covered with checkers or something.
Right.
And like orange and green, or like they were dressed in like cross colors.
Yeah,
they
and AMC like, Hammer pants.
Yeah, they look like... I don't even know what to say they look like. They look terrible.
Yeah.
They look 90s.
Kurt Cobain looked 90s. Okay. They look like jerk-offs.
Yes. Checkers and fluorescent colors and just not a good look.
No, it was very odd.
Yeah, it was very odd. Yes. Yeah.
And they were great. Actually, all four guys in the match were really good. Neidhart, you almost forget how good he was because... His partner was Brett, so he kind of, you know what I mean? You think of Brett as a great worker, but Neidhart was fucking awesome. But the Orient Express guys were really good, too. It was a good match. It was a fine match. It, you know, for a kickoff to a major pay-per-view, it was fine. But, yeah, it was no Rockers and Orient Express. It was not a match that 28 years later I remembered.
Well, it wasn't a match that when it leads off makes me forget who the Rumble winner was.
Right, right.
Yeah, whereas Rockers Orient Express 91, you're like, wait, who won that? Oh,
right.
That's right, Hogan won that.
Yeah.
But the first thought that comes to your head is Rockers Orient Express because it was so good.
Yeah.
This year, different iteration of the Orient Express, and I remember that Ric Flair won the Royal Rumble, and that's what I remember from this show.
Right, right. You know, we also forgot to mention, I got arenas mixed up with another show we're going to do. This was in New York, yes. Albany, right?
Yes.
At the Knickerbocker Arena, and I was like... I'm looking at my notes right now, and that was my first thing. I was like, what the hell? What Knickerbocker Arena? What? That's a weird name. I was like, what did they let Tessa Blanchard name it?
I believe they did.
Yeah, I didn't know what that meant.
At a very young age.
Yeah, right. But, yeah, it was fine. Owen was great. Owen took, you know what was one part I noticed about that? Owen took the turnbuckle the same way Brett did. Chest first.
Oh, chest first?
Right?
Yeah. Which yeah. always looks savage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Owen dove through. Well, it was Owen dove. Oh, Owen dove. I'm not even that drunk, dude.
Rookie.
Owen dove through the ropes, which is a big move back then. Like, nobody did that.
Yeah, does that every match now. But back then in 92, like.
Right. Like, I mean, I'm waiting for Braun Strowman to figure out how to dive through the ropes.
Right.
But yeah, like, nobody. I bet it was, like, one of the only dives to the ropes that year.
Yeah.
You know, which was what made it cool.
Yep.
But yeah, it was almost good. It was almost great. Oh, I forgot. Gorilla compared the Orient Express. He said something along the lines of, like the Midnight Express, the Orient Express are hard to beat.
Yes.
Which was really weird. That never happened back then.
Yes. They would never mention guys that were in other promotions.
Yeah.
And for him to even allude to the Midnight Express, which is really weird too, because in 92, the Midnight Express were definitely on their way out of WCW.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there was some sort of segue there, what was supposed to happen with like the Midnight Express eventually coming to the WWF. I don't know. But yeah, that was really weird that he would allude to them. Let's not forget this kicked off. As you mentioned on our Bobby Heenan episode, this was his finest work.
Oh my God, yeah.
And this...
When I watched, decorated throughout. I mean, like, just a real asshole-ish attitude, but legitimate arguments for every single match.
And constantly talking about Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Like, this...
The praise was unbelievable.
Well, I actually... Oh, yeah. Well, the tagline for the pay-per-view was actually, that's not fair to Flair.
So appropriate.
Yeah.
But this kicked off... his finest night of work with the mm-hmm. WWF.
Yeah, totally.
Following that, you had Rowdy Roddy Piper versus the Mountie in the match for the Intercontinental title.
So this kicked about because Brett was running 117-degree fever or some such shit. He had the flu, lost the belt to the Mountie.
Is that legit?
It wasn't 117.
I mean, I know
just
that.
Just a shade.
No, but I mean, was he legit sick?
I don't believe so.
I sort of suspected he might have been hurt.
He might have been, but I think this was really the ultimate plan to set up a WrestleMania 8 match between he and Piper.
Okay, okay.
So that's what set up this match was Brett had lost the match to the Mountie, like literally like the night or two nights before due to a fever and a sickness. Mm-hmm. Mountie beat him, proceeded to hit Brett with the shock stick. Piper came in, made the save. That set up this match 1 or 2 days later for the pay-per-view.
Right.
And set up Piper's first singles titles win in the WWF.
Yeah, which was way long. I mean, he'd been there. So this is 92. He would have come back in 89.
Yeah.
But he had had like a 3-year run before that or something. So like he was there a long time for that to be his first title run.
Yeah. Well, he came into the WWF in what, 84, I believe.
Yeah, and he would have been there until 3, so 87.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, 8 years later is his first title run with as many high-profile feuds as he had with, like, all the top names in the WWF. Mm-hmm. For this to be his first title, it was great. What a moment for him.
Right.
Definitely set up, definitely set up that match with he and Brett at 8 wonderfully. And not much to speak of for the match itself. It was what it was.
Yeah.
I just always thought that Mountie shock stick noise that they had to pipe in was so ridiculous. Like, even back then, I was like, come on, guys.
You know what, though? I can tell you, I've heard electricity at work, right? That's what electricity sounds like.
But, wait, okay.
But the filter that they had to implement it in.
No, I don't know how they did it. I don't know where they got the sound effect from, but it's actually a pretty accurate. If you ever hear electricity, which you don't hear, but I work with electricity, the first time I ever heard it, I was like, whoa, it does sound like the Mountie Shock Stick. Like, I was kind of surprised.
Okay, but could a camera pick that sound up at ringside?
Sure, yeah.
It's really?
Not, I mean, yeah.
And echo it throughout an entire venue like that.
Well, I mean, a microphone could do that, yeah. I mean, it can be loud.
They have the elements now.
Yeah, it could be pretty loud. Yeah.
Okay, so we could suspend disbelief a little bit because you are a certified electrician. You actually work for Pacific Gas and Electric.
I'm not an electrician, but yeah.
But you are qualified to speak on the behalf of electricity.
I'm a qualified electrical worker. Yes.
Okay. There you go.
I know. Yeah, I know electricity well.
Okay, so you can vouch for this.
It does sound like that, and it can be like I've heard it from like a block away. Okay.
Okay, well, there you go. So all these years, I thought it was bullshit that they had to pipe that sound in, like Goldberg chants. But here we are with the sound of electricity. But that could have been legit. We know it wasn't, but it could have been.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I know it's not legit, but if it were legit, it would sound like that.
Okay.
So one thing when I made my notes, why did they put the Mountie with Jimmy Hart? The Mountie could talk. Like, I don't think he needed a man. First of all, they were sort of a mismatched... I know that he was the Rougeau's manager, but then it was like, when he became the Mountie, the Rougeau's had never existed, as was the way they did things back then.
Right, you forget about it.
But I don't think he needed him. I don't think Jimmy hurt, but it was kind of like he was good enough. He did a promo before the match, and it was really good.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that was kind of bucking the trend of guys needing mouthpieces back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, Mountie definitely didn't need one.
Right.
But they needed to have Jimmy Hart out there with somebody. So
that
he
makes
was
sense.
Jimmy Hart's singles guy.
Right.
Right. He had the Natural Disasters too, but he needed a singles guy. So the Mountie just fit right into that bill.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, how much longer did they stop doing managers? Like DiBiase had his $1 million corporation up through like 95, 96.
Yeah.
But I mean, really like managers start to fade out a lot.
Right.
After this point.
Yeah. Another thing is Piper did a promo before it. He told the Mountie, he called the Mountie one of the original Village People.
That's right. Yes,
which,
he did.
Which I'll let the listeners figure out what that means.
Yeah.
No need for me to weigh in on this.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we all know what Roddy Piper was up to.
He could work a little blue.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. After that, you had Beverly Brothers, accompanied by The Genius. Versus the Bushwhackers with Jameson. Very animated promo leading into that match.
The Bushwhackers promo?
Yeah.
The Bushwhackers were fucking insane.
They are nuts.
Did you ever see them before, or was this like your introduction to the Bushwhackers?
This would actually be my introduction to them. I've definitely heard of them several times, references, but to finally have homework and be exposed to them. Yes.
So they were a comedy team, right? Like, that's what you got from them, is they were a comedy team?
I definitely got that.
Okay, so Would you believe me if I told you before they came to the WWF, they were like hardcore cage match, bleeding every match, making their opponents bleed, like brutal heels? Could you see that? Because before they came to WWF, they were the sheep herders, and they were shit heels, and they made their opponents bleed. They bled. When they came to WWF, they completely did a 180 and became like these goofy faces that had these types of matches with the Beverly Brothers.
Now that you mention it, I could see that in their persona, or like just like a hidden character gem within them. Now that you mention it, but I would have never suspected it even before it.
Yeah,
this one.
It was such a weird character turn when the WWF brought them in, and it was brilliant.
What a 180.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of the sheep herders when the Bushwhackers came in.
Yeah.
But I used to pick up PWI, you know, a couple times a year, so I would see pictures of them as the sheep herders.
Right.
Every picture, they're covered in blood.
Yep.
And I was like, what used to go on with these guys? Like, these guys were crazy. It was kind of like when I'd pick it up a few years later and I'd see ECW pictures and Sandman's, like, bleeding out through his face.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the Bushwhackers were always up to. And I was like, oh my God. And then I was, like, young enough that I was a huge Bush. They were, like, my favorite tag team for a while. Or second favorite after the Rockers for a while.
Okay.
And they were clowns. And a complete joke. Got in the ring. Didn't do a fucking thing.
Nope.
You know what I mean? They did nothing.
They sold.
Besides that battering ram, can you think of a move either of those guys ever did?
No.
No, of course not.
No, of course not.
No, but they didn't have to.
Nope.
You know? They got in and they did their thing. They mostly sold, right? They usually always were fighting their way back.
Yes. But, what a brilliant move by the Bushwhackers, though, right? Like, you're in these matches, in these... I don't want to call them indie territories because they were UWF guys for a minute, but they were always having cage matches. They were always bleeding. They had these brutal matches with guys. Then WWF offers them a spot. Hey, we want you to go out and lick some kid's head. Put a hat on him, right?
Right.
Have a crappy match. Win, lose, whatever. Just walk back to the back. Your night's done.
And the kids are going to love you for it.
And the kids are going to love you, and you're going to have a long career here in WWE. You might even make the Hall of Fame.
And they made a lot of money, I'm sure.
They made a ton of money. Action figures, t-shirts, hats, you name it. Coliseum home videos. You know, you name it, they did it. And what a career for those guys.
Right, right, right.
To what it was going to be, doing what they were doing versus what WWF handed them. Kudos to the Bushwhackers.
Right.
And what's funny is, much like in our NWO 98 episode that we talked about, how there were guys jumping guys after the match for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
That happened in this match as well. The idea was Jameson wanted to get at the Genius.
Yeah.
And
now, I forgot that Jameson ever hooked up with the Bushwhackers. To me, like in my head, until I watched this match, Jameson was some guy from like the mid-80s, like Tuesday Night Titans.
Yeah, he was like a primetime antagonist.
Yeah, the Bobby Heenan show, right?
Yes.
I totally forgot that they had brought him back and put him with the Bushwhackers. Yeah. And then when I watched the match, I was like, it made perfect sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, oh God, dude, during this whole thing, all Bobby Heenan did was just, all he did was just talk shit about Jameson. Like, he was destroying Jameson.
Yes, between talking about Flair and then going back to destroying Jameson. Again, I mean, I hate to keep going back to Heenan, but he was so good on this pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And he wasn't even trying to go into business for himself.
Right.
He was just being Heenan, doing his job.
Mm-hmm.
But even he, with his colorful commentary, was making this match something.
He made you, exactly, because you would it would almost be a match you could just kind of like, not back then, but now you could like look at your phone through half of it,
yes.
You know, and not care because you're like, whatever, it's some match, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
and it's the Beverly Brothers, and like nobody's a Beverly Brothers fan.
Right.
You know, like
I
don't think the Beverly Brothers like the Beverly Brothers.
Yeah, they probably hated that run.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is like they actually, they were pretty good in the ring.
They were all right,
but what a shit gimmick and a stupid ass name, and one of their names was Bo.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was so dumb, and the Bushwhackers were the better team.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, the Bushwhackers should have been nowhere in the Beverly Brothers League, but that's who you liked out of the match.
Right.
But yeah, Heenan starts talking about Jameson, and also another part of it is the Genius was out there with the Beverly Brothers, which I forgot that he was their manager for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out and does that stupid fucking poem. Right? And then Gorilla Monsoon, right out... I think after he's done with the poem, he says this guy needs psychiatric help. Gorilla Monsoon's diagnosing of mental disorder because he wrote a poem.
Yeah, and also in 92, you could laugh at that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. You could laugh at mental illness.
Right. Gorilla's totally right.
Right. You can only laugh at that in 92 or if you have a drunk podcast.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Next one after that was tag team championship match between the Natural Disasters, with Jimmy Hart at their side, versus the Legion of Doom.
I was a huge Legion of Doom fan back in the day.
Yeah, me too.
Like, the Road Warriors are probably my top tag team of all time.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, this match was crap. It really was. Like, it should have been either a clean finish or give the Disasters the tag team championships. I mean, really, a count-out win, that's kind of a cop-out. I always hate when they go that route. Like,
it was a double count-out, I think.
No, Natural Disasters won by count-out.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a double.
Count. No, they beat Legion of Doom by count, and I always hate when they do that.
Did they have a rematch at WrestleMania that year?
No, that would have been... No, Road Warriors didn't even have a match at that year's WrestleMania.
Is that when Hawk got suspended?
That would have been 8. Yeah, so Hawk got suspended or whatever. They actually took the titles off of them and gave them to Money, Inc.
So I wonder if the reason they had a double DQ was because they were going to have a rematch.
Well, they ended up losing the titles at a house show to Money, Inc.
Right, but I mean, I remember, I wonder if the original plan was to have the Natural Disasters and the Legion of Doom have a rematch at WrestleMania. That's why they did the DQ count.
Oh, maybe.
You know, but then Hawk fucked up, and then, you know.
Possibly.
Yeah. It was, the Legion of Doom were great. This was not their, this was far from their greatest match.
Oh, not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. They just didn't have a good match that night with the Natural Disasters. It was okay, but again... It was another one of those undercard matches where you're like, this really wasn't strong. You know, you compare it to past year's Royal Rumbles or even future ones, and the undercard really just didn't stack up to what was to come for the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, it was no fault of Legion of Doom that they had a bad match.
Sure.
Nobody had a good match with the Natural Disasters.
Right. This is true. I mean? Very true.
Like, what are they going to do?
Yep.
They did exactly. their best.
Yeah.
You know?
No, they really did. And they could make big men look good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just not a lot of chemistry with the natural disasters. My opinion, and again, I'm a huge Road Warriors fan, but not one of their finest moments.
Right, right, right. Yeah. So, I want to, before we get to the next match, right, a couple things happen in between, right? They were doing, or a couple things happened in between. They were doing the, remember back in the day they used to do the interviews for, like, everybody who was in the Rumble would do, like, a little 15-second interview?
I love that.
Right?
Like, 20 consecutive cutaways or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, so one thing I noticed in it, and I watched really closely, and maybe I was wrong, but they used to have that set backstage, right, where it was a locker room, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they'd always do the interviews in the locker room. Now, when I was a kid, I thought every locker room in every arena in the country had the same telephone and same blue lockers, right?
Yeah.
I had no idea. Dude, I literally did not know this till like 8 years ago that that was a set that they carried with them from arena to arena. I had no idea that those weren't actual lockers. That wasn't a real working phone.
Yeah.
I thought that was a real locker room.
Nobody was using them.
Yeah. I had no idea that that was a set that they had designed, like the way they have the Raw with the screen now that Charles stands in front of.
Yeah.
I thought it was real locker rooms. So they're in the Knickerbocker Arena, and for whatever reason, there's a WrestleMania 6 poster hanging up in the locker room there. Right? I don't know if you noticed that.
I didn't see that.
And I looked really closely, and maybe someone with a better TV than mine can look at this. If you can see this and I'm wrong, tweet us. Maybe it was a WrestleMania, because this would have been going into 8.
Okay.
So maybe it was a WrestleMania 8 poster, like a subliminal advertisement for it, but I swear it was a fucking WrestleMania 6 poster, which made no sense because WrestleMania 6 was not at the Tessa Arena.
Right.
It was not that year. It didn't make any sense to me.
Oh, that is so really, weird. Really, really I totally odd. Missed that.
Yeah.
I have to go back and watch that.
Yeah, so they did all those great backstage, and it's one of those things where you kind of watch those and you're like, everybody back then was good on the mic. Like,
yeah.
every one of them. Even, like, yeah. Greg Valentine.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was in this match. I forget.
He was in 92,
okay,
yes.
But even Greg Valentine was pretty good on the mic. There was nobody... You know, now you're like, oh, Charlotte kind of sucks on the mic.
Yeah.
Or whoever. Nobody was like that back then. Like, they're all good on the mic.
I'm trying to... Sorry, I just got your text.
Hold on, we've been interrupted. Scott needs some Crown.
Yeah, where's the bottle?
In the fridge.
Talk to him.
Okay.
Oh, here.
Look at that. Bartender on the way.
Okay. Ice, please. Yes. Thank you. Your wife is the best, dude.
I know.
She literally came in just to get me more Peach Crown.
Yeah, she's the best.
That's awesome.
So all those interviews were good. The one that really stood out for me the most was Roddy Piper's, because he sort of started with like Martin Luther King's I have a dream speech, but this was like, so this would have been going into WrestleMania 8, right?
Correct.
This was like a year and a half after he painted half of his body black to wrestle Ahmed Johnson.
Oh,
and
boy.
He comes out quoting Martin Luther King. It was insane.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And then we got, right after that, we got a barbershop replay.
Oh,
that right.
That's right.
Which was the greatest thing. That's got to be the most infamous like interview type thing of all time, right? Like,
so this is Shawn Michaels' big showing after the big heel turn.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Not one person doesn't remember that. And you're totally right. It was like, at the time he didn't catch it, but like looking back at it, they clearly were going to push him because, they showed Shawn Michaels' storyline going into into the Rumble match itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's your crown ruined by peach flavor.
Thank you.
Yep. Tip your bartenders, ladies and gentlemen.
I take lap dances.
I totally forgot till I watched it back that Flair announced that he was number 3.
He did.
Before I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, he
totally
did announce that he was 3.
Yeah, so that was kind of interesting because nobody really ever did that back then.
Yeah.
No, still they don't.
They said that they don't necessarily celebrate because no wrestler has ever lasted to the final 4 if they were numbers 1 through 5.
Yeah.
So not necessarily something that you wanted to publicize or something like that. But, I mean, it worked for this episode.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, that pretty much leeways into it. That was time for the Rumble, starting with the British Bulldog and Ted DiBiase.
Yeah, so DiBiase and Bulldog were first. Why wasn't Flair just first?
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right.
Like, he may as well have just been one or two.
Yeah.
And then DiBiase could have come in at three.
To be that vocal about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird number.
Well, if you're going to
give
him
this kind of thing.
If you're going to give him something like that, like, go all the way with him and make him number one. It's not right. like he was number 10.
Right.
You know? So that was kind of weird. So DiBiase was out, like, immediately. DiBiase was out before the buzzer hit.
I'm wondering if he was hurt.
Oh,
like
that's
as to
a
why
good
they
call.
Threw him out so quickly.
Yeah, yeah, that's possible.
And then that set up Flair and Bulldog to that's go totally, a little bit longer.
And you know, they didn't have that like 300 wrestler deep roster that they have now.
Right.
Like if you were on the roster, you were in it most likely.
Pretty much.
I mean, unless you were like Outback Jack or something.
Right.
But yeah, you know what? That's actually a really good question.
I mean, he could have been hurt. Who knows?
Yeah, it was kind of surprising to me that happened.
But this is another example, and we talked about Hogan a couple of times being a heel for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So when he transitioned into the NWO in 96, it really wasn't that much of a character swerve.
Right,
boy, did
right.
he show his colors in this match?
Oh, my God, he did, yeah.
At the end of the match, you're like, okay, why am I supposed to hate Sid?
Right,
like,
right.
You pulled a total dick move by yanking that dude out of the ring. Like, why am I mad at Sid and not you?
Right, right,
but
right.
as a kid, you're so ingrained, prayers, vitamins, Hulkamania,
yeah,
that
yeah.
you're going to be like, oh, Hogan was totally right to do that. But what exactly did Sid do? It was every man for himself. We knew that.
Right.
And Hogan yanks him out from the outside. That's no better than William Perry and John Studd at two.
Right, right.
Yeah. Where Perry was the heel, and you're like, dude, that's kind of a dick move. Hogan pulled the same crap.
Right, but you loved him for it.
And that's, yeah, were we just blind marks back in the day? Like, oh yeah, Hogan was totally right. And you go back and watch now, you're like, no, Hogan was a dick, dude.
Yeah, he was. He was a fucking dickhead.
Yeah, he really was. Like, he had that heel side of him that we all just kind of turned a blind eye to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, years later, you go back and watch it, you're like, dude.
Right, and he would come in there and rake your back and gouge your eyes and throw you over the top rope,
you know,
take you outside, fuck you up.
And you throw him out of a battle royal, he's going to try and yank you out.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, it was fair. It's fair game.
It totally is, yeah. And as he's holding on to Sid, Flair comes up and dumps out Sid, becomes world champion. You're like, you just totally made that happen.
Right, right.
Like, you hate Ric Flair, but you just made him world champion.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, but the match itself was really good.
It was a solid rumble.
So many guys were in the match. I have a lot of notes. Like, the crowd hated Shawn Michaels. We already mentioned that that this was kind of his, almost like his coming out,
right?
As a heel, they hated him. He might have gotten the biggest boo of the entire night.
Yeah,
like they wanted to just like the Knickerbockers wanted to get in the ring and fuck him right up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It was not
like him.
Right. Right. Yeah. Texas Tornado was in the match.
Yes, he was.
Now I found myself unable to look at anything but his foot.
Well,
do you have the
you
same?
Didn't know then.
No, but now that I know.
Now that you know.
All
you're
I
like,
do is look at his foot looking for a.
You're like, should they have tossed him out twice?
Well.
Shit. I mean, 2 feet have to touch the floor.
Yeah, that's true.
Well,
yeah.
As a fan in 92, I was more interested in Flair and Texas Tornado being in the ring at the same time.
Right, right.
Because if you're a wrestling historian, then you know that Kerry Von Erich beat Ric Flair for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. Mm-hmm. And here you are 8 years later with those two guys in the ring in a battle royal. That was really interesting from a historical perspective. But they kind of glossed right over it. It wasn't even mentioned.
Right. It was a big thing for him to win it. And then he lost it like 3 days later.
3 days later, yeah.
Because cocaine's a hell of a drug.
It is.
Yep.
So says Rick James.
Yeah, but I'm like, now when I see him, whenever I see him in any match, I'm constantly looking at his foot, trying to see if it turns funny or something is up. I don't know if you know this, Adam, but one of Kerry Von Erich's feet was fake.
It was not something that stood out when I was watching it.
No, it wouldn't. Nobody
very,
knew that.
Very
right.
well covered.
Dude, I didn't find that out until years later. He was in a motorcycle accident and they had to amputate his foot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it wasn't because of Sugarfoot.
At one point, Sean and El Matador comes in and Sean's whipping his ass in the corner and just more Bobby Heenan just being stellar on this show. He said Shawn Michaels is making guacamole out of Tito Santana.
Oh, Jesus.
And Gorilla Monsoon said, no, he's not.
Will you stop?
Yeah. Gorilla took that comment seriously.
Bobby Heenan was so good in this match.
Yeah, really the highlight of the whole for
it
me.
It really is.
Anyway.
He had one concern. And he made it clear from start to finish on this pay-per-view that Flair was his one concern.
Right,
that's
right,
all he cared about.
Right.
Every match he would bring it up. The Royal Rumble, he was literally on the verge of like going into hysteria over Ric Flair.
Yeah.
he was just that good and believable. Like, you go back and watch it now, you're still like, dude, Bobby Heenan really wants Ric Flair to win this.
Totally, totally.
Like, even though you know he's just selling.
Right, right.
It's still, he's so good at what he does.
Yeah.
And I said that maybe WrestleMania 3 was his finest work.
It's this.
You saying War Rumble 92, you're 100% right.
Yeah, yeah.
I went back and watched it from start to finish.
It's so funny.
Heenan is in so rare form, and just, he's phenomenal.
Yeah, at one point, Piper teams up with Flair and kind of starts helping him, and Heenan's, like, so excited.
Yes.
And he's like, I take back everything I said yes. about him. It's a kilt, not a skirt.
Yeah.
And a minute later, Piper turns on him. It's a skirt, not a kilt. A skirt.
Yes.
Yeah. It was so great. Also, did you notice that Ric Flair looked like he had a tennis ball on his back?
Oh, no,
he had a big lump. He had like a big lump on his back.
Like a tennis CM ball. Punk type lump on his
yeah,
back?
Yeah, yeah. Like, it looked like he had like a tennis God. Ball like it had been put under his skin.
Oh, yeah. What is that, a staph infection?
Maybe.
Interesting.
I don't know. Maybe he was with a woman who wasn't clean. I don't know.
I mean, Space Mountain.
Right.
You know, you can't screen
yeah.
everybody.
Yeah, he might have caught that at the Omni Hotel. I don't know.
You could have, yeah.
Yeah, but something weird was going on there. Yeah. Oh, remember there was the spot where the boss man goes over the top rope, hung his neck up on the bottom rope.
Oh no, I didn't see that.
Yeah, he went over the top rope and his head went under the bottom rope. His feet hit the floor, right? So he sort of pivoted around his head, and his throat came up and caught the bottom rope.
Oh,
it looked bad, but I don't gnarly. Remember him ever being gone or hurt.
No.
So I think he was okay, but it wasn't like one of, you know how they'll like back in the day, they used to do that spot where they drop you on the top rope.
Yeah.
Like throat first, but it would go under your arms.
Yeah, like a hot shot.
Right, right. It was not like that. It was his throat came right across that bottom rope.
Ooh.
Yeah,
what
it
match was he in at 8?
What match was he in at 8?
That was the 8-man tag, right? Him and Virgil and...
That sounds right,
the Nasties and Repo Man or something.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds right.
So maybe that's how they got around it. Maybe he was hurt.
Could have been, yeah.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. I totally missed him. I have to go back and watch it.
Yeah, it was nasty. Also, at one point... Flair toss, so Bulldog was in it for a long time.
He was.
And it was one of those things. They've done this in the Rumble a lot of times, and now looking back at it, this was the Pat Patterson booking move. He just tossed the Bulldog like it was nothing, right? Bulldog was in there for so long, and then Flair was just like, toss right over the top rope.
Hmm.
Unceremoniously.
That is a weird thing to do. For somebody that's been in the ring that long, you figure there would be a little build up to it.
Nothing. He just tossed him
and
like
just
he was
dumped him.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was Damn. Just it was, you know, making Flair look good. You know,
yeah.
Flair had been in there for a long time at that point, and he looked great.
Yeah, Bulldog was definitely not the priority in this match.
Ooh, no.
He'd have his chance years to come at SummerSlam 92.
Yeah. there was another part where Bobby Heenan said something. Nikolai comes out. And Bobby Heenan made a reference to Nikolai being Lithuanian, which I don't think he was Lithuanian. I think he was like Croatian or something like that. So he says something about, oh, the big Lithuanian. And Gorilla goes, yeah, things aren't going well for those Russians over there. What?
Gorilla.
Yeah.
Stuck in the 80s.
I was like, wait, what? Yeah, I was like, yeah, it was. I mean, I guess the Cold War was only recently over, but someone forgot to tell Gorilla.
This is before Nikolai and his Sense outfit.
Right, right. When Nikolai turned American, like
yeah,
I love
yeah,
America.
Yeah. Was partnering up with Sergeant Slaughter.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, but no, this would have been after, because I think Nikolai was, no, I think Nikolai was a babyface at this point.
Okay.
Right? Because this would have been, almost a year after 7.
Okay.
Yeah. Number 17 in the ring surprised me. Do you know who it was?
Mm-mm.
It was Eugene. I'm sorry, it was Hacksaw.
Wasn't the same.
Yeah.
Virgil and Hacksaw eliminated each other.
Yeah, they did.
That was a weird elimination.
Yeah.
You didn't often see faces go head-to-head in these types of matches. You would often see the face go after a heel or vice versa. So for Hacksaw and Virgil to eliminate each other, that was kind of weird in this match.
Right, and Virgil came in number 23. And do you remember what Heenan said when he came into the ring?
No.
He said he came in number 23. You have any idea how many bags he's gone through in the back?
Oh. Good Lord.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that's kind of like getting close to the end of the match itself. And then, like you said, Sid tossed Hogan. Hogan turned heel. Not really.
Not really
pulled
turned
out
heel,
Sid.
Though.
And then Flair tosses Sid.
Yeah.
And at that point, when Hogan went out, I think most people thought that Sid was going to win.
Right. I know I did.
Yeah, for sure.
I for sure did. I didn't. I mean, Flair was kind of like my third choice to win this match.
At best, yeah.
I thought one and two were Hogan and Sid, mm-hmm. either or. Flair had an outside shot at number three. But as soon as Flair won, I immediately thought, okay, WrestleMania 8 is now going to be Hogan and Flair.
Right, right, right.
And
exactly.
Sid's going to have to find another opponent.
Yeah.
I did not have Macho Man on my radar at all to be facing Flair at WrestleMania 8.
No.
And maybe that's a podcast for another time, but I still don't know why it was Hogan versus Sid.
Well, because
at
there
WrestleMania
was well, because
it was
supposed to be
Flair.
Well, that was the infamous thing where it was supposed to be Hogan and Flair, and then they even did that contract signing.
Yes.
Which I don't remember ever seeing, but I've seen it 1,000 times now because it's like this legendary story where that was supposed to be the match and then it wasn't.
Right.
And like the story was, I mean, from everything I've heard anyway, is that they were doing the house shows and Hogan and Flair just weren't getting a very good reaction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I've heard, well, I mean, you never know what's really true when you hear it from him, but I've heard from Meltzer that that's what was going on.
Interesting. Yeah. You don't know. Again, who knows what's true and what's not, but bad house shows could mean, hey, we don't see money being made at WrestleMania. Let's flip the script a little bit, throw mm-hmm. Macho Man in there. So who knows what's true, but as a kid, I know I wanted Hogan and Flair.
Everyone did.
It never happened. And that's still, to me today, baffling.
Right. So after the match, that's that. It's got to be Flair's most iconic WWE promo, right?
Without a doubt.
He's got Perfect back there. He's got Heenan. Mean Gene's doing the interview.
Everyone celebrating.
I mean, you're talking four Hall of Famers right there in one interview.
Exactly.
Right? And their Flair was in rare form. He was on fire.
Legit tears, too, I think, on his part. I think he was really crying.
Out.
Like,
yeah.
I think so. Yeah, and that was the infamous, which we use in our intro, where Mean Gene yells to someone off camera, put that cigarette out. Which I was like, I would love to hear the story behind that. Like, why? Who was smoking? I know it was back then where you could smoke at work.
Yeah.
But, like, who was smoking? Like,
or was there a party atmosphere and that's what he was alluding to?
Yeah.
Like,
and,
party
like,
going on back there.
And who thought they could smoke around Mean Gene? Like, obviously, Mean Gene was calling the shots. Like, that was awesome. But Flair was with the tear in my eye, that whole thing. Awesome. And then perfect weight in. And it was like, that's one of the most iconic. You know what? I would say it's the most iconic backstage promo.
Yes.
In WWE history,
right?
I
agree with you. Yes.
Yeah, it's got to be. The cream of the crop's right up there, but the cream of the crop wasn't a big deal till like YouTube.
Right.
You know? But yeah, it's got to be that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
incredible. Because in that moment, there was no better backstage interview. Like, you could see the emotion from all four guys, especially Flair.
Yeah.
And when he said with a tear in my eye, you knew that there was a lot of legitimacy behind that.
Yeah.
Coming from the NWA, WCW to then reach the top of the heap in WWF. Huge accomplishment for him.
He would have been the first guy to do that, right?
Yes.
I mean, if you go all the way back,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because Dusty never won the title there.
No, and Bruno was never NWA champion.
No, he was not.
As far as I know.
Nope.
You wouldn't have had...
Hogan never even held the AWA title.
Right. Superstar. So, none of those guys.
That's
right. I think Flair
would have been the first
one.
LOD would have been the first ones to win championships in NWA and then WWF because they held the tag team titles in both.
Right.
Both generations.
Yeah, but Vince hates tag teams anyway.
He really does. He really does.
But yeah, it was a really good pay-per-view. Like you said, the undercard match was the main event made up for the undercard match. The undercard wasn't exactly bad. It was just kind of fine.
Yeah, it was home.
It was present. Yeah. It was there.
It was like a 7.
It was there to lead up.
Yeah. But the Rumble match itself was great.
It's phenomenal. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot. It just has all those classic guys.
It was a who's who. Yeah.
Right. I mean, dude, you know what? It would be actually really interesting to go look at how many of those are in the Hall. Out of 30 guys, how many are in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah,
I bet.
Good point.
I bet if 20 aren't now, 20 will be.
Yeah, you're talking at least 40, 50, 60%. Easy.
Yeah, easy. Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, the backstage interview, the commentators, a lot of Hall of Famers on that show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was like star power wise for the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there was ever a better show.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. It
was
star-studded.
I can definitely see it watching this particular one. Even not knowing a majority of the names, it did feel like it was very loaded in this particular one.
It was big time.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. All right. Well, I think that about covers Royal Rumble 92. I think we're about 3 weeks late, 3 to 4 weeks late with Royal Rumbles. And I know a lot of people a lot of podcasts cover Royal Rumbles this time of year.
I'm still drinking in celebration of the most recent one. So
there you are. Yeah, you are drinking a Scottish soda. And I know a lot of podcasts have covered this one in particular because it's such a loved one, but I guarantee you none of them did it drunk.
That's right.
Thank you.
We did.
Yep.
With authority. So
That's Royal Rumble 92. Again, if you want to check out any of the, or check it out on the network, and then look up all the fun stories behind it and some details that were brought up during this episode. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening to us. Again, make sure that you follow us on Twitter at @wrestling_drunk on the multiple platforms where you download this podcast. First off, thank you to all of you who've been downloading. We're just astounded by the numbers that we've been seeing. So thank you very much to all of you. And we want to keep hearing from you. So want to get those reviews in. And then just let us know what you think, whether you agree, whether you disagree. I mean, these are just open-ended topics. We're just we're reiterating the events that took place and what kind of effects it had with our perception of all these wrestlers, both on the industry and just as characters. But yeah, just leave reviews. We definitely want to hear that. And then also retweet anything that we send out on Twitter. All those numbers really do help. Please continue to tell your family, friends. You know what? Tell your enemies as well. I mean, they'll teach them a lesson. Then they'll go off on you like Bobby Heenan for 2.5 hours or so. But you know what? It'll be entertaining as hell, just like what this particular pay-per-view was. And so I think with that, with Eddie and Scott, I'm Adam. 1, 2, 3. This episode's over.
Cheers.
Cheers.
See y'all.
This one girl who really liked wrestling. Yo, we should body slam, she would always text me. She says she likes it hardcore. Baseball bats and barbed wire. Thumbtacks that are on fire. Yo, I think something ain't right. She threw me through a table last night. She don't know it ain't real life.
But you should see our home movies. They're pretty tight.
I'm in awe and it's awesome. She's like dope, it's a problem. Yeah, she a funny hoe.
She's always
I was like, girl, you so stone cold. You Steve Austin, steel cage match in Madison Square Garden. Ding ding, we're just getting started. Let's get ready to rumble.
I can take some bumps, man. I can take some tumbles. But she thinks that every night is like a fucking Royal Rumble. And I start to get a little scared when she grabs a steel chair like she's on the top rope. Girl, how'd you get there?
Yo, I think something ain't right. Gave me the people's elbow last night.
I wouldn't let her do that again.
I'm in awe and it's awesome. She's like dope, it's a problem. Yeah, she a funny hoe.
She's always laughing.
And a middle finger always flashing. I was like, girl, you so stone cold. You Steve Austin, steel cage match in Madison Square Garden. Ding ding, we're just getting started. Let's get ready to rumble.
Shorty.
Friend, we could have a little bout for the tag team championship. An Irish whip to the ropes. I'm bouncing back with a clothesline. Think the belt's mine. Then you drops the leg drop. The Brooke Hogan. Her finishing move and a slogan. I'm knocked up. I'm Seth Rogen.
What?
Man,
what you been smoking?
I'm in awe and it's awesome. She's like dope, it's a problem. Yeah, she a funny hoe.
She's always laughing.
And a middle finger. I was like, girl, you so stone cold. You Steve Austin, steel cage match in Madison Square Garden. Ding ding, we're just getting started. Let's get ready to rumble. Shut